Today on Maine Calling, how society perceives people with disabilities. Whether someone has a physical, mental, or other disability, they often face stereotypes and discrimination. For example, someone who's had a stroke and slurs their speech may find people treating them as though they aren't intelligent. People with developmental disabilities are often stereotyped as violent. Others with disabilities regularly feel ignored or invisible in a group situation. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll examine perceptions about disability. We'll hear from those who live it every day and what they wish people would understand. Do you have a disability? Have you experienced situations in which you felt misunderstood or ignored? Join the conversation. This is part of our series, Ready and Able, Living with a Disability in Maine. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Maine Health, where care teams provide expert coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self. MaineHealth.org, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at SeacoastMission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. For those who live with disabilities, there are challenges going about daily life, but there are even more invisible challenges because of society's perception. Today, we're going to examine the stigma, stereotypes, and discrimination that people with disabilities often face, and we'll talk about how to change that. This show is part of the Maine Calling series, Ready and Able, Living with a Disability in Maine. We are streaming live on Maine Public's YouTube channel and Maine Calling's Facebook page, with an ASL interpreter. Joining me for this hour, Simone Mallon, who is Executive Director of Consumer Counsel System of Maine, Betsy Hopkins, Associate Director for Developmental Disability and Brain Injury Services with the Maine Department of Health and Human Services, and Josie Easler, who is on the Board of Directors for Speaking Up For Us. Josie is blind, has autism spectrum disorder, and ADHD. We invite you to join the conversation. If you're living with a disability, share your experience with how people have treated you or how you feel as though people think about you. Or if you have questions about how people with disabilities would prefer to be treated or perceived, call in as well. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you all for joining us for this hour, and I think this is a really important conversation. Betsy, I'm going to start with you by just asking, we are doing a year-long series about people in Maine living with disabilities, and we discussed this a little bit on the last program, but for those who missed that, and for the purposes of our conversation today, give us a broad view of who counts as a person with a disability. What are some of the disabilities we may be talking about?
So there's a broad spectrum of people who either themselves count themselves as a person with a disability, or in our system of supports across the state, at the department, or all of the across the government government systems. But it's, you know, people who really require or ask for and should get certain access to all of the services and systems and things that are needed really for them across the state. And so, so what are the systems that, how do we provide that access really in a variety of different ways? So whether it's a person who is deaf and hard of hearing and they require a sign language interpreter to access information, you know, then that should be provided for them. In whatever they need for to access those systems, or individuals with IDD and autism. We have a number of different ways to provide access to services and supports for individuals. And I think I'll just say this now, I'm really happy that you're having this conversation today. And More than ever, it's a time when we need to come together across the state to talk about access to services and supports for people with disabilities and have this conversation. I think there's a lot of different ways.
And what we're hearing right now is one of our guests, Josie, has a device called a JAWS that helps Josie understand what's being said. So when we hear that noise, there's nothing wrong, just a different guest on today's program. But I want to ask you, Betsy, following up on that, when we think about people with disabilities, this is a very large group of people. I know the estimates differ depending on what is included and what isn't, but we're talking 1 in 4 or maybe 1 in 3 people.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, the other thing I want to mention today, which you've got on this panel, is when we're talking about what's needed or how do we talk about people with disabilities, it's so important to have them there with us at the table with these discussions. And so I love that you have this panel put together with other people with lived experience, that you've made it accessible for people by providing an interpreter. And that's so important for all of the conversations that we have. And we take that to heart across state government as well.
Well, Simone, I'll turn to you. What are some of the stereotypes, some of the misperceptions that are right out there that you'd like to address right from the top?
So first, thank you, Jennifer. There's a lot of things that I think people may not understand about people with disabilities. For instance, if you receive benefits, I'm a person that received benefits at one time in my life, Social Security, Medicare, food stamps. People think that that's a luxurious system to survive in. So that is one piece. If you don't know, you know, living on a very, very fixed income is not luxurious, and it is very challenging. And there's a lot of discrimination that happens out in the world. I've experienced discrimination in working on my master's degree. I've experienced discrimination in employment. And a lot of it stems around, what do we think? I'm a person with lived experience in with mental health challenges or psychiatric labels, however, whatever is a good label. I'm also a person that's been sober for over 30 years, and that's a big part of my journey as well. So what do we think about people with disability? One, they can't work. Two, they can't make decisions for themselves. That everyone else knows what's best for us, often without asking us what we know we need in our journey, whether that, whatever the disability is. We have a big saying in the disability community, it's nothing about us without us. And that's there because historically, that's what happens to individuals, is they, you know, the community, the world thinks they can make decisions and know what's best for us. But what I will tell you, one of the positive things about having a disability, one is not is all the people you get to meet. But I will tell you, having on my journey of wellness, it required me to do a lot of my own emotional work and heal so many parts of myself. And I think of that as I got an opportunity to wake up and to be the author of my own story in my own life. And would I wish a disability on others? No, but there's opportunities to use your story in ways that can make a difference in so many ways. So there's lots of myths about and discrimination, but there, I also, I'm a person that tries to also point to the positive as well. So
I want to turn to you, Josie. Yeah, thank you, Simone. I want to turn to you, Josie, and ask you what you experience on a day-to-day level in your interactions with other people. Do you feel as though people stereotype you or get you wrong?
Well, First, thank you so much for having me. It's amazing to be here. Basically, what can happen is sometimes people don't understand. A lot of discrimination, misjudgment, and mistreatment comes from a lack of understanding. When people don't understand what it's like to have a disability, they can make assumptions. So if we can teach people about what we experience, then maybe people will stigmatize us less. So, for example, as a person who doesn't have vision, I have a hard time finding a job. I'd love to work, but I haven't had any luck because I need a lot of assistive technology. Also, as someone who's neurodivergent, people do use a lot of stereotypes. People think that neurodivergent people run and scream and bang their heads, and that's not always the case. Autism is a spectrum, and I'm more than capable of working. I just need the right job with the right support. There's also the issue of transportation. I can't drive, so getting places can be difficult. And we just need a lot more understanding. People need to realize what we go through in order to be less judgmental.
I want to talk to you, Betsy, about an article I read recently looking at the movies and how people with disabilities can be stereotyped in movies, and thinking to myself that perhaps this is a reflection of society in large. And the stereotypes that they point out are the villain, somebody is the bad guy, the superhero, the opposite, sort of somehow making someone into being more than human, the victim, the butt of the joke, and eternally innocent. And the example given there is the two examples, Forrest Gump and Rain Man. And I'm wondering, as you listen to these sort of movie stereotypes, and we can all think of times when somebody with a disability has been the villain and somebody with a disability has been a superhero, what you think? Do you see this? Do you see this reflected in people's everyday lives, these stereotypes about them?
I mean, I think Simone and Josie have already talked a little bit about that, but I the most important thing I think for people to understand is that everybody, we're all just people. That's the baseline of everything. And we're people who have challenges, and we're people who have exciting things in our lives, and we have families and we have jobs. And if that can just be the baseline for all of it, and then on top of that, maybe somebody needs additional support to do what it is that they want to do in their daily lives. That's really what we want to be talking about, I think, here, when we're talking about supporting or being a supporter of people with disabilities, and more importantly, that they are the people who are telling us what they need. On every level, which is what Simone mentioned early on.
Yeah, Simone, and we have this conversation about so many things in society is not treating people as though they are other, that every person is a person, every person is normal. And I'm wondering if you have any reflections on where we are today in 2025 in America in treating people who may seem different on the outside as normal humans with full lives.
I think that's very much still a work in progress in our country. We see people who are different. And if honestly, if we haven't experienced people with other abilities or differences in our communities, there can be strong reactions from community members. We also, it's really important. Normal is, I hear my washing machine going right now, and often we joke about normal is really just a setting on my washing machine and nothing else. Who gets to define normal? Who gets to who claim it? I just don't. I think when we humanize people and we expose our communities to different, and we're curious instead of fearful. And I think Josie might add the same thing, but I always welcome questions. When, my disability, we call sometimes call them invisible and visible disabilities. Like for me, because I have mental health challenges, they're invisible. So people may not think see me visually and think I'm a person with a disability. But there are other disabilities that are very visible. And so I hope people just become curious and not fearful. One of the big things about mental health that people get very fearful about is around there's this very large myth in our communities, in our country, in our world actually, that people with mental health challenges are violent. And that continues. You want to talk about movies and other things. And while there is a very small subset of people that might have violence in their story or part of their, those of us with mental health challenges are more likely to be victims of crime than actually perpetrators of crime. But I will tell you, I always struggle every time I turn on the news because if something bad has happened, my next thought is, oh, please let them not say they had a mental health diagnosis, because then that further perpetuates that myth that we're a dangerous community. And that's a really hard thing, because then we also we teach the world that it's not safe to get help. Because if that may become your label of a as a violent person, you may be less likely to ask for help than not.
Josie, what would you like to add to what Simone has just said?
I definitely think that whether someone has a visible or an invisible disability, they should always have the ability to access whatever help and support they need. And I do want to say that appropriate, sensitive questions are okay. If you have a question for someone with a disability, ask it, but ask in a polite and just empathetic way. Don't ask insensitive, hurtful questions. You can ask how a blind person gets around. You can ask how much vision a blind person has. But I have been asked very, very ignorant questions about my blindness and about my autism. And just be sensitive. Sensitive and polite questions are acceptable. And getting help should always be acceptable, no matter what the disability.
We're talking about perceptions and stereotypes about people with disabilities today on Maine Calling. This is part of our year-long series about living with disability in Maine. We're calling it Ready and Able. If you have lived experience and want to share it, if you have questions for our guests, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we're talking about misperceptions, stereotypes, even stigma for those who live with disabilities. Our guest today, Betsy Hopkins with Developmental Disability and Brain Injury Services for Maine DHHS, Josie Easler with Speaking Up for Us, and Simone Mallon with the Consumer Counsel System of Maine. Share your comments and questions. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Brian Harnish, who has a physical disability and uses a wheelchair. He also works with several organizations, Disability Rights Maine, Consumer Counsel System of Maine, and Speaking Up for Us. Thanks so much for calling in, Brian.
Hello, thanks for having me.
If you would, could you share some of your personal story, how your disability came about and what you do now?
Well, I have spina bifida, so that's a lifelong condition. When I was born, a part of my back was actually open. So I use a wheelchair part-time and leg braces the rest of the time.
Wow. And
yeah.
Go on. And Tell us about your life today. Are you able to navigate in Maine with the wheelchair and physical braces? You're in Orono, right?
I'm in Orono, yes. It's certainly a challenge at this time of year with the snow and everything. But I'm fortunate that I do drive. I'm actually paying off my car pretty soon, but it's not the easiest in the world navigating, and I have a lot of friends who use public transportation and require like the main care reimbursable services, and a lot of times they either don't get picked up, don't get dropped off, you know, that kind of thing. So I know it's a challenge for a lot of people.
Today we're talking about different perceptions of people with disabilities. I'm wondering if you've had experiences where you're just scratching your head and thinking, why did that person say that or treat me that way? You know, what is your lived experience of how people treat you in ways that you feel like it may be because you're in a wheelchair or using braces?
I get a lot of really inappropriate questions, depending on the audience, like sexual questions, for example, people that assume that I either A, don't have desires, or B, like my stuff doesn't, my, for lack of a better term, my parts don't work, or that I just have no interest in it, for the things from the truth. And another that I actually got pretty recently was I was at like a local convenience store, and I was using my chair, and I went to open the door the way I have to do it. And this woman who was like practically running towards the door to help me open it, I had already gotten through the doorway, and she was like, oh, that's so, you know, she practically wanted to like pat me on the head and be like, good job.
Yeah.
And I honestly didn't know how to respond.
Yeah.
Like
I've read that.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I've read that, you know, people, and tell me if this has been your experience, that on the one hand, people will sometimes have a stigma in which they believe that someone is less than or not capable. But then on the other hand, that some people with disabilities are like sort of stereotyped as being more noble or more wonderful or something. And I'm wondering if that sort of second one is sort of how you felt with that woman.
Definitely, definitely. Like I don't really need to be praised for doing things that everybody else does.
Yeah, yeah.
And like as far as,
go on, finish your thought.
No, as far as like, we were talking a little bit about like portrayal in the media and stuff and like movies I heard earlier. Honestly, one of the things that kind of gets me to pop the most is like when I see representation in advertisements, like normal everyday interact, you know, like say for example, I'm into a clothing store like a Target or something, and I see someone in a wheelchair in one of their ads on the store, you know, that kind of thing is what gets me more than you know, someone being portrayed in a movie as a superhero or something like that.
What do you want what do you want people to know about how someone like you who has a visible disability, what do you wish that people would understand and just know?
I guess the first thing would be that we're not kids. We don't need to be talked to or treated like we're infants or kids. And that we're with the proper accommodations, we're capable of, you know, just about anything anybody else is.
Yeah. Well, Brian, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your perspective. Brian Harnish is a photographer and helps advocate for disability rights. Let's see. We are going to go to Rick, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Rick. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you.
So I wanted to make a comment about having become blind 8 years ago after an accident. And people definitely respond to you differently when you are disabled. In my experience, they seems like they're either afraid it's contagious or they're afraid you're going to want something from them, and neither, which is the case for me. But and I don't really blame people for this. I think that's just how people are. But my real question is, How does one who is disabled connect with other people who are, let's say, similar, just for the sake of recreation or whatever? It just seems like there's no real link that I can come up with where I would just talk to other people like myself.
Yeah, I'm guessing, Josie, what would you suggest for Rick?
Morning, Rick. Really glad to hear from you. First off, being blind for 8 years, I was born blind. So being blind for 8 years, that must have been a pretty shocking and huge adjustment. So I do get that. Finding other blind people, that is hard because Maine is a small state and I have very few blind friends. Most of them are in other states. I met a lot of my blind friends through various summer camps that I went to when I was younger and I've stayed in touch. So that's actually something I've been struggling with, is connecting with other visually impaired people. Especially with recreation and leisure activities. There are some great things. I have done Special Olympics before. I have gone down to Sugarloaf, where there's adaptive winter sports. They do skiing. They have skiing, adaptive snowshoeing, tubing, things like that. But it is very, very hard to find other people up here. Especially, I'm all the way in Aroostook County, and there's not a huge amount of blind people up here. I don't know where you are, but that is a struggle that I've been having. So I really empathize with that. I'm not sure how exactly to help you connect, but definitely, if you can connect with Voc Rehab, they might be able to help you. They're a great resource.
Great. Josie, I'm wondering, Rick is calling from Portland. Would you suggest the Iris Network?
Absolutely. They are wonderful to connect with. I have connected with them, and they are absolutely brilliant. So definitely, if you haven't reached out to them, please do.
Yeah, Rick, good luck. And thank you for sharing the difference between, your life before and after your accident. Thank you so much for sharing in. Let's see, we'll go to Sol, who's also calling from Portland. Hi, Sol, go ahead.
Hi, can you guys hear me well?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for having this conversation. It's actually, I've been mulling over this incident since I witnessed it, ever since I witnessed it, and I would love to just, like, broaden the conversation. I go to the pool a lot. I've gone to the pool a lot, and I was at a Westbrook Community Center Community Open Pool, which has the name Community Open Pool. It's for people in the community to come enjoy the pool. And I saw, a kid come in running. He was having a blast. He did come in running, which you're not supposed to do in the pool, and he's also a kid. He was also, nonverbal, neurodivergent kid who, while having a blast in the pool, was also, having a hard time, necessarily following all the rules perfectly the whole time. And I was pretty shocked at how immediately, so the kid comes in from the locker room excited, maybe faster than he should have. And just the young lifeguard, who's just also a young, teenager trying to do her part-time job, just immediately went to, surveillance, scolding, discipline. There was no smile on her face. And I've seen young lifeguards interact with other, quote-unquote, rule-breaking kids. It's not usually so extreme, zero tolerance. Just immediately hounding him every single time he does something. And also this kid was the only black kid in the pool. Everyone else was white. As an educator at first, it's just I notice how kids get treated and, what works when you're trying to get kids to, follow community norms in a setting. And there's also a lot of conversation that's really advanced in education about, you know, the intersections of disability and racism and how people are perceived and then treated. My question for the whole community, listen to this, is, you know, this happened at a community center, at a community event, and we're talking about just like the general lack of awareness right now in the community, and I'm wondering how we can, instead of having this conversation about disability and racism, be limited to, you know, fancy educational research and professional development.
So, Saul, I'm gonna send your question to our panel, and I'm gonna go to Simone. Simone, I'm sure you're not surprised by Saul's story, and I'm wondering what lesson that that has in it for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, that is probably a very common occurrence out in the community. And again, I think it's about, you know, parents need to educate, schools need to educate, you know, we need to make these things normal. And have more compassion for difference. And so my heart breaks for that little kid, because I'm sure the pool was the best thing that was happening at that moment for that child. And we don't all follow the rules. And I bet that teenager who was a lifeguard probably hasn't followed all the rules in his or her life either. So how we come across to the world is really important, and how we, show compassion. We all want kindness for ourselves. And, you know, we have to put that same kindness out there for individuals, especially people who are different, that we may not understand what their story is.
Yeah. Saul, thanks so much for your call. An email here from Lisa. I have a sister and friends who are wheelchair bound. In social situations, concerts especially, people dismiss them by surrounding the chair but not communicating with the person. My sister and I were at a concert and people filled in around her and she couldn't see. It is noticeable. Betsy, when you hear that email, are you surprised?
Oh, I wish I could say I was surprised, but I'm really not. And, you know, I think Simone and Josie have said it really well, which is we really have to, as a community, as a state, as a nation, think about how we can think about our perceptions and support for people in the communities. I sometimes get asked, you know, what can I do, as I live in Maine, and what can I do if this happens? And sometimes just going over and talking to the person, engaging in communication, and, you know, stepping out is can be really powerful for everybody, for the person themselves and the individual. And also, you can speak up, you know, in situations like that. You can ask the people that are there and say, hey, I noticed that you can't really see. Is there any, you know, can I help you figure this out? Or even going to the people there at the event to say, you know, is there something that can be done to help? So really stepping up and helping. But more importantly, talking to the person first, right? Talking to them and see what it is that they might need at the given time.
We'll go to Sharon calling from Bangor. Hi, Sharon. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a couple things I'd like to say. One, the lady that was just on mentioned, a question to ask is, how can I help, or what do you need? Instead of questions, a lot of questions about the disability, because number one, everybody's disability is different. I am very visually impaired to the point where I can just barely see to get around. And I also have a mobility issue. So I can't see people's faces at all. So I educate them. So that's my second point. We need to help educate people, because sometimes people either aren't aware or are so busy with their own lives, they don't stop and think, oh, yeah, that's right, you can't see. And then the third thing I'd like to say is a positive thing. There are so many aids and help. I had a bad vision accident about 4 years ago. So I've always been visually impaired all my life, and blind in one eye and partially in the other. But now my vision is 20/400. I had ridden the city bus for 46 years. I now qualify for the wonderful wheelchair van service. They take me to the grocery store for $3 with my walker, and they bring me back. And as far as technology, I have a CCTV. That works best for me in magnifying. Other people would use an OcuCam on their eyeglass temple to read things. And I have Siri on my phone. I can talk to my text. I love it. It's not perfect. They need to improve it a little bit. But there's so much technology out there versus when I went to college in the 70s. I just wanted you to know that there's so much out there for visually impaired people. And thank you for your time. This is a very interesting program. And whoever that person was that stood in front of the person in the wheelchair, I think I would have taken off the brake and just gone ahead a little bit.
Sharon, thank you so much for calling in. We are going to take another break. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Our topic today, part of our year-long series called Ready and Able, Living with a Disability in Maine. Our first program, we talked about transportation. Today, we're talking about perceptions and stereotypes of people with disabilities. This show is being streamed live on Maine Public's YouTube channel, as well as Maine Calling's Facebook page, along with ASL Interpretation. Our guest today, Josie Easler with Speaking Up For Us, Simone Mallon with the Consumer Council System of Maine, and Betsy Hopkins with Maine DHHS. You can join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. And I'll go to Dave, who's calling from Gorham. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hey, Jen. I just wanted to share that when I was in college, I met my wife, and her father was a upper extremity bilateral amputee. He lost both of his arms in a power accident in the late 60s. And he was one of the most influential people in my life. But I remember what an education it was, how people treated and reacted to him. And it was a great education for me on how I wanted to treat people who are going, who have been through something like that, or who are handicapped, whatever, you know, whatever challenge they face. And one of the things some of the stuff that I noticed was, like, you know, we go in and sit down at a restaurant, waitresses would start talking to us like he was deaf, or people would just stare at us unendingly. And it just, you know, it just drove me nuts. And from him, I learned patience, and just that we all have someone in our lives who has something that they're dealing with. And it benefits all of us to be patient and to be helpful and not to do that kind of stuff. And one of the, you know, like now when I see someone struggling with a door and need a wheelchair, I don't make a big deal. I just go and say, can I help you? And they'll say, yeah, would you mind? And I just do it. And it's like, thank you. Yep, you're great. I just don't make a big deal of it. You know, they're people just like us. And one of the things that struck me that stuck out with my father-in-law was that he loves kids. He said, because kids just ask. And they don't get into embarrassing questions, you know, about, you know, how your body works in certain places at certain times. But they ask questions, how do you hold the fork? Because he had prosthetics and hooks. And he, you know, it just, he loved kids because he loved that directness. And I think some people, that's a lesson that we can all be learned, but, you know, be appropriate when you ask those questions, obviously. But, you know, he passed away in the early 2000s, and I have one of his hooks that I keep on my bag. I'm a teacher, so, and I point it out to my kids every year that whenever I think I have it hard in life, you know, there was a man in my life that showed me what hard is and how you can overcome anything. So it was his attitude and his education, really, that helped me become, I hope, a better person around people who are challenged in life. So I just wanted to share that, you know, that approach, so.
Yeah, Dave, I really appreciate what you're saying about your father-in-law. And when you're speaking, it reminded me of something that Kim Moody with Disability Rights Maine said to me one time, which is, disability is a part of life. And you were talking about that, Dave. You said all of us, or most people, have something going on, and you're probably seeing somebody every day, whether or not you know that.
Absolutely. And that's kind of a lesson. You don't know, first off, you don't know if they are dealing with something or not, or if they've got someone in their life they're dealing with. I get into a fender bender with a young man in a big truck, and I get out of my truck, and I'm about 6'2", you know, 280, so I'm kind of a big guy. And this guy wasn't that big, and he got out, and I realized the way he backed up, I must have terrified him, so I had to take a deep breath because I was pretty upset. But he looked at me, and he said, he goes, I'm really sorry. My grandfather's in the truck, and he has an appointment, and he's got advanced dementia, and he was distracting me. And I just looked at him, and I looked and saw his grandfather, who was really mad at me. And I looked at the kid, and I said, don't worry about it. All of a sudden, you know, I'm getting kind of cheery. I just went, can you give the kid a break? I said, no worries. Don't even give me a card. We're good. See ya. And that's just the stuff that I think people on an everyday, if you notice it, you can make a difference, a positive difference, I guess.
Dave, thank you so much for calling and being part of the conversation. I'm going to go to an email here from Chloe. For the caller who wants to meet other blind people and for all people with disabilities, Pine Tree Camp in Rome, west of Waterville, does programming for people with any and all disabilities, including family members who come with them. It used to be called Pine Tree Camp for Crippled Children, but in the past several years, it has invited all people with disabilities to come to camp. The cabins are ADA and lovely, including a treehouse. The lodge dining room has a picture window with a view of Bigelow over North Pond. They're open sometimes in winter and totally open the rest of the year. So that's a big plug for Pine Tree Camp in Rome. Ken on Facebook writes, another stereotype is that people with disabilities are brave when we're just trying to live our lives the best we can. Josie, do you agree?
Now unmuted.
Yes, I do.
Unmuted you.
Definitely. I mean, it does take a lot of bravery to navigate the world when you have additional challenges. But we shouldn't necessarily be given extra brownie points because we're just people. We want the accommodations that we need to survive and have a good quality of life. We don't want extra pats on the back. We don't want extra praise. And we talked about praise earlier. So I have a story. When I was a teenager, so the high school that I went to has a wonderful farm store where they sell all kinds of produce and honey, and students have the opportunity to grow the produce and work in the store. And I was able to work there a couple of times during my high school career. But I came out of the restroom one time and someone was like, did you wash your hands? And I'm like, yes, of course. And so I was like, good job. And all I could think is, nobody had told me I had done a good job washing my hands since I was 4. Why was someone telling me that at 14? So things like that, like, we don't need like all the additional stuff. We just need the accommodations that we need.
Thanks for that. We'll go to Randy, who's calling from Dover, New Hampshire. Hi, Randy. Go ahead.
Good morning. I thank you for providing insight into disabilities. But I think that as we understand generally what is a disability, it's physical. And I think the majority of the conversation has focused on what we can observe that is really physically oriented, the eyes and the hearing and how we move or don't move. But you know, I'm just going to, because it's complicated, the insight into the cognitive disabilities, I wanted to use like William Shakespeare's King Lear as an example of a disability that a king was not aware of. It was a mental disability that allowed that character to be manipulated, and you could treat them like a puppet and coerce them. And it applies to our current political situation where someone with a disability is on a rampage, and we don't understand disability well enough to understand that's not power. That is a weakness. And we have to expand upon, you know, looking into those cognitive neurodegenerative conditions possibly that may show up on an MRI, but we don't rely on science enough. We don't listen to scientists. We don't allow people with knowledge into these matters to help. And we're going on stereotypes.
Right.
And we have to stop that.
Randy, we have to move on. We have so many calls coming in. Thank you so much for calling. We'll go to Shane calling from Westbrook. Hi, Shane. Go ahead. Oh, boy. We just lost Shane. Okay. So we'll go to Jim calling from South Portland. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I wanted to address an earlier caller who was talking about issues of connectivity with other people in the disability community and make the group on this call today aware of something that my partners and my daughter-in-law has begun with other colleagues of hers in the disability community. She became a quadriplegic as a result of an auto accident 2 years ago and found pretty quickly that access to services for somebody young and disabled were pretty meager. And she connected with somebody else in a similar situation online, and they've begun an app, and it's also on Instagram and YouTube, an app called the 10% Community, in respect of the fact that 10% of the population is disabled in one form or another. And this group is trying to address issues, day-to-day issues that anybody with a disability in any of those five categories might encounter. And I just thought this might be a helpful resource for people in Maine as well. So the name is the 10% Community. You can find it in the App Store and lots of really useful YouTube videos and just resource material that I think would be helpful.
All right. Well, Jim, thank you for sharing that with us. Jim calling from South Portland. Brian Harnish, who called in earlier, wrote in with an additional comment. Brian wrote, I try and educate as best as I can in public, but at the same time, I'm torn because it really shouldn't be my job and is sometimes very tiring and frustrating. Simone, you're nodding.
Yeah, I can relate to Brian's comments because it is a challenge. Like, one of the things that our organization does is legislative advocacy. And so, you know, I often have to tell my early year stories in which I was told I would never work again. I would live a life of disability. And luckily I had an amazing team of providers and supporters and family and friends that helped me to challenge those thoughts and what the system was telling me. But yet when I talk to people, they think, oh, you can't have been one of those people because you're an executive director, you're this, you've accomplished that or whatever. And I'm like, look, I am a person that I am not just the worried well. I have lived a life of disability and having to educate people about that constantly because they make a different assumption about me because they see who I am now, and I can't possibly have been the person I'm describing that was on Social Security and Medicare and food stamps and nearly died from suicide. A lot of this stuff. When I tell people I had 10 psychiatric hospitalizations in 2.5 years, people look at me like, mm-mm, mm-mm. And I'm like, okay, that is my life, you guys. So it is a struggle sometimes when you're constantly having to teach people how to accurately understand someone's story or life experience. Because, again, we all make assumptions. So,
yeah, we do all make assumptions. And I'm wondering on that note, Betsy, if you have some final thoughts about how we all may be able to, might be questioning our assumptions when we live day to day and live with and encounter and work with people who have disabilities.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been said a number of times by Simone and Josie and others who've called in, you know, just really listening to people who have lived that experience and listening to those voices, especially if we're going to be talking about supporting people with their needs and their rights in particular. The other thing I just want to end with is that if you're in a position, if you're listening and you're in a position to encourage access for people, whether it's technology or physical access or communication access, either in your organization or you're going to an event or you're planning an event, really put that on the top of your priority. Because if you have, if you make the time to make sure that there is access for those events or training or whatever it is that you're doing, then that opens it up for people to attend and participate equally. So,
well, thank you. Yeah, thank you to all of you. The voice you just heard, Betsy Hopkins with the Developmental Disability and Brain Injury Services for Maine DHHS, Josie Easler with Speaking Up for Us, and Simone Mallon with the Consumer Counsel System of Maine. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy, and we had help from Nick Godfrey. And thank you to our ASL interpreter, Marissa Zastro, with the MJ Grant Interpreting. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we talk with Emeritus Bowden Professor Randy Stakeman about Black history in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.